This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Mary Isaw John recently received the news that she was selected as a 2016 Outstanding Dietitian of the Year. She's the first Malaysian to be served the honour by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the world's largest organisation of food and nutrition professionals. The award is given by the Academy every year to recognise top individuals from its affiliate associations for their performance and service to the profession. I'm speaking with her today about how awards like this can spur others on in their career as dietitians. Mary, welcome to the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Firstly, congratulations on receiving the highest recognition a dietitian can get. What did you feel like when you first received the news?
Yeah, honestly, I felt really good. I said, yes, that's in our country, dietitians, to get recognition for dietitian is not easy, number one. Number two is we work with doctors and nurses and pharmacies and the group, but I think this is my dream, you know, before I retire I must get. So I work towards it, working in my leadership, working in my legislation, working in my clinical community charity, but all around dietetics and nutrition, and I think the reward is there.
Is that very important to you, for a dietitian to be involved in community? Because I don't think that's often thought of as the first thing, you know, the first purview of a dietitian.
Yeah, I must admit that when we graduate out, we always will want to get into the hospital, which is a clinical setup. But I have worked in clinical, I've worked in food services, I've worked in wellness, and I've also worked in community in my current position. Dietitians have three areas where they can work. One is clinical itself in the hospitals. The other one is in food service and catering, and community. Communities are good because you know why? You reach the so-called not-so-sick people. So you can actually do prevention, which is better than cure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you always been interested in food?
Yes. You know, I started cooking when I was 12 years old. I followed my mother, my late mother, she's also Mary Isaw, to the kitchen, to the market. I watch her how she chose the fish, chicken, freshness. And then I and we are basically Malayali family, so she cooked the Malayali way. At that time, I didn't think of the health aspect because I only looked at the cuisine, you know. But later, I modified all her recipes to make it more healthy. Yeah, I love cooking. I love the markets. I love farmers' markets. I like farms. That's how my life has been.
You know, that notion of being able to adapt something to make it more healthy, I think a lot of people hear that and immediately go, not possible. You know,
yeah.
If something tastes good, that means it's unhealthy. If something is healthy, that means it doesn't taste good.
Sure.
Yeah, would you like to address that? I mean, what kind of modifications did you make to your mother's recipes?
Okay, let me tell you something. First, you need to know how to cook, which is always a challenge with dietitians. Number two is, you know, when you follow a recipe, like, okay, I took my mother's recipe, I followed exactly. Now, in Malayali cooking, there's a lot of coconut and coconut milk, which is predominant in all recipes that they have, in their appams, in their mixed vegetables, they call it avial. So without coconut, my goodness, there's no dice, you know. So what I did is, over the years, I modified using less coconut scraping. For example, when you make yogurt curry, I switched to low-fat milk, where they used to use fresh cow's milk at those days, right? And then, you know, the amount of oil we put in for the stews, Kerala stews and things. And then they used to love lamb stews, so then I used to trim off the fat, you know, slowly but surely. I've gathered all that recipe. So when I cook, I have no guilt kind of thing. I said, hey, so my friends asked me, how do you do this? Well, you really need to know how. You need to know what substitutes, and you need to do trials and errors, and finally you'll get that standardized recipe.
How did you go from being, you know, a little girl in the market observing your mother to getting into dietetics? How did you go from the taste of food to the nutrition of food?
Oh, those days we didn't have many universities in Malaysia. So my dad decided to pack me off to India, Chennai, to do medicine. But nothing short of anything. When I went to Chennai, I saw the universities. I thought that, no, medicine is not my line. Not that I don't like it. I didn't like particularly cutting up in surgery. Number two, I need my sleep hours. I never liked shift works. And I thought studying for 5 years was 6 years was really a toil on me. And my passion was always in food. And that's when they opened up for nutrition and dietetics as a 3-4 years course. And I went into, and I must say I did pretty well because I had a passion. And when you have passion, you do so well.
How much has the field changed or evolved since you first, you know, went to university in Chennai and started working?
Oh, when my first job was in Johor Bahru, I still remember the first day I took the job. About a week later, the surgeon called me and he said, he didn't know what a dietitian was, and he said, "Can I speak to Mary Esau, the kitchen supervisor?" So it was that era to today, "Can I speak to Mary Esau, the chief dietitian?" It made a difference. So you can imagine how they looked at us. Unfortunately or fortunately, our offices were also near the kitchen. So they had this thing.
It made logical sense,
yeah,
I guess.
So that's why they called you. So so it has come a long way. We are recognized pretty well now. They know what a dietitian is. When I give talks, I say, "Have you met a dietitian?" Many of them meet, but if I asked this question 20 years ago, nobody has ever met a dietitian.
How much access to resources and technology did you have compared to now? How much, in fact, what role does technology play in the work that you do?
I think those days we had to write everything. We had limited books on nutrition and dietetics. Our technology has helped us a lot. We can search for journal papers. We can, you know, look at contradicting debates about nutrition. What are those websites that give you evidence base? I don't think I can survive without it anymore. It's really an asset. And sometimes when patients come to our clinic, they make so much of fuss about things. We go to the website and we teach them from the website, which is so easy now. Life is so good in that way now. Compared to those days, we had to handwrite and do the planning of the menu. Now we just click it, it comes off.
How did you cope with the limitations at the time? I mean, not being able to just pull up a page and say, "See, this is why you should listen to me."
Well, I think it was a coping mechanism. When you don't have it, you decide to become a MacGyver, right? How do you manage within that resources, you know? And I think that way we are very good. For example, working in the community, in Indian slums, you had to think of high-calorie food. But in the slums, they had only about 1 liter of milk for the whole family, maybe half a liter of milk for the whole family. So this is a survival skill. What would you do? What would you think? And that's the time I was thinking, we need to give them high calorie, dense food. So that's when the Malaysian kuih became such a blessing for malnutrition. So we used to do this kuih kataya, we used to do kuih kaswi, you know, to make it healthy. I mean, not healthy, to make it bulk, because they need calories. So survival, you know, a coping mechanism. So if you put us somewhere at that time, we'll somehow get something done.
You were talking earlier about you know, about the trimming of fat from lamb, for example, about replacing you know, milk, full fat milk with low fat milk, and so on. It can feel, I think, very difficult sometimes negotiating health news.
Sure.
You read and you're like, well, okay, so am I allowed to eat margarine anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, you told me once that fat was bad, now it's good. What are the principles that have held true from the time when you first started to now, where these basic principles are still the foundation of healthy eating?
Okay. This is a very generic in the sense that balance, moderation and variety, it still stands. Okay, it still stands true for nutrition. The type of fats have changed tremendously in the market. And for example, we have the introduction of trans fat, which is something really new. Teaching my patients is upheaval. They say, how come this trans came in? Due to hydrogenation of the good oils, you know, to make bakery products and shortening. And most of our bakeries and all that use these type of fats. So this is something new. The other thing is about proteins, right? Lean protein, like vegetarian has become more significant now compared to last. Most of them were non-vegetarians or vegetarian. So diet, now I find that I plan more vegetarian diets for my patient. So that is a challenge because we have to look at their B vitamins. How do we manage their good sources of protein? And then we have to look at their bone health, right? So that's something new, right?
I'm speaking today with Mary Isaw John from Institute Jantung Negara, and she was recently selected as the 2016 Outstanding Dietitian of the Year. So we've been discussing that. Up next, we find out more about her life as a dietitian day to day. If you would like to find out more about your diet, if you'd like to ask Mary a question about something that you might be doing right or might be doing wrong about weight loss, give us a call. That number is 03-77109000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Mary Isaw John, dietitian from Institute Jantung Negara. And we're talking about her outstanding dietitian career, basically, but also what the work of a dietitian is. And we have Jonathan on the line, so we'll get to Jonathan first. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Good afternoon. Can I speak to Mary?
Yes, she's right here.
Yeah, Jonathan.
I just want to know more about gluten. What does it do? And what does it constitute? What food constitutes gluten?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Sure.
Gluten actually comes from wheat-based products, and many people, it's actually, the gluten is actually the protein, the protein from the flours, and many people have either intolerance or sensitivity to gluten. Somehow the stomach enzymes will not be able to digest this, and therefore they will start having bloatiness in stomach, and they will feel very irritable. Now, for this, you have to really go and see a doctor and confirm that you really have this issue. But many Malaysians here, they will do kind of a quiz thinking that whether they have it or not. So if once you are diagnosed with gluten insensitivity, then foods that are based on flour, wheat flour and other products have to be very scrutinized. So reading the labels would help you. But Jonathan, it would be good if you want to know more, then you can consult a dietitian who will really help you. Okay.
But by and large, gluten isn't a big bad guy, right?
No.
In health. It's really just for people who have intolerance.
Have a sensitivity. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yes.
It's just that people are sensitive. It's like allergy. When you're allergy to the protein of the product, like eggs and all that. So it's actually not bad, but some people somehow can't tolerate it.
If you've got any questions for Mary on diet and food, give us a call. That number is 03-77109000. You can text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Sly would like to know, what is a good diet for geriatrics?
Oh, that's a very general statement, but let me tell you, geriatric people will depend on their comorbidities at the age. For example, if they have diabetes, they have other issues, we will have to actually examine that. But if you're talking about a straightforward case, a person who is much
generally healthy,
we use the plate concept, you know, so they can fill half the plates with their vegetables, quarter of it with a portion of rice or noodles or other cereals, and another quarter with lean meat, chicken or fish, but it has to be soft because maybe the chewing might be a difficult thing. Then they can have their fruits, and the fruits also must be soft sometimes, or you can have it cut it up into small pieces. This is the portion. Now, the problem with geriatric is they have to eat slowly, right, and take time because of the slowdown of their organ systems. Yeah, after a certain age, your system slows down. So you will not be able to digest food as you used to. And the other thing is make them in a comfortable position. Have some fun in the sense, have people around. If they sit alone and they eat, they become very sad and depressed. So they may not eat well. So it's good to have company.
With the fruits, most fruits would be all right in that situation? Nothing, you know, because sometimes people worry about the sugar content of fruits. Would that be an issue?
Well, all fruits have sugar. That's we can't run away from it. But there's always a portion. You. For example, somebody asked me, can I take durians? I said, yes, you can. But if you want to take it with your meal, it's two seeds. He said, are you sure it's two seeds, not two fruits? I said, no, not two fruits.
Who is eating two fruits?
Well, there are people who can sit down and they compromise it for lunch. That means I'm not taking my whole lunch. I'm going to eat the durian. So these are not encouraged. Maybe once in a while it's fine, but not on a regular basis.
All right. And Adnan has a question about height and weight. Good afternoon, Adnan.
Hi, good afternoon. I would like to ask a question.
Yes.
Okay, my question is, if you look on the internet or on the books, you'll find that different height have different kilo. For men, for example, 178 cm is 80 kilo, something like that. Is this a standard for all men from Asia, from Europe, from Africa, or it goes by region? Because different people have different food habits, and from my understanding, sometimes it doesn't work. Some people have heavier bones, some people have are more fleshy. So my question, doctor, is this, if let's say someone wants to monitor his weight, so does he take this as guideline and reference?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Adnan.
Okay, this will follow each country, right? Every country has a guidelines. Based on the guidelines, they will say what is your BMI, what is your height and weight. For the Asians, the BMIs are slightly different from the Westerners. Okay, Westerners are known to have much bigger bones. Heavy bones compared to Asians. Asians are more lean and bone is also more leaner than the... But I want to say there is no blanket statement to say that, okay, if I'm 160 cm, my weight must be 60 kilos. That may not be true because sometimes you have slightly heavy weights, you know, in your bones. So if you are about 60 to 65, I don't think you should worry so much. Unless you are so much overweight, where that will cause an issue for your bones and for your knees and later some other issues. So my question is, you meet your doctor and you speak to your doctor or the dietitian, and they will tell you the local weights that you have. You do not follow the website or internet because the internet is information for all, but it might not suit individuality.
I've also read some people talking about how they no longer judge their weight or their weight loss by the number on the scale.
Mm.
Instead, judging it perhaps by measurements,
yes,
or by clothes, you know, just how they feel.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that a way to go about it as opposed to looking at just kilograms or pounds?
My question is, you also have to look at the kilograms and pounds. That, I think there's nothing wrong. If then you will know how much you have lost. But the other one is the type. Some people, they look at the percentage of fat. When they look at the percentage of fat, they get very frustrated because it's very difficult to reduce your fat percentage unless you really go into a very strong exercise regime. Some people will look at their dresses. They can wear one size less, right? There are patients of mine, he says that I used to wear XL, now I'm wearing L. So I think that's good for a layman. So he knows, he understands or things like that. But normally when we do this, we look at your BMI, we look at height and weight.
We have a question here from Logie on the line about coconut milk, which is also matched up with Hamza asking via text. Logie?
Yes, I read somewhere that cooked coconut milk is harmful, whereas uncooked coconut milk, like the one you top it up in some dishes, is safe.
Mm.
Can you verify that?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, coconut milk is a saturated fat. There is new studies from Japan to show that uncooked coconut milk, that means coconut milk which is served in desserts and all that,
chendol,
things like this, do not change in their compositions when taken in the body. But whenever you cook it, the composition of fatty acids has a tendency to change. How far this is true, we do not know, because if you look at it, like there are certain communities in the world that actually have taken coconut milk from the day they were born until, you know, they go to the tomb, and they have survived. But in the Indian culture and Malay culture here, coconut milk is important. My question now is, whatever it is, it has to fill into your fat percentage. So if you want to use some coconut milk, yes, you can use it, but in small amounts. If you want to cook it, it's fine, but they normally say cook it until it's just simmering right? Other than that, there's not much evidence about it.
Well, Hamza's question about uncooked coconut milk was actually specifically to do with cholesterol.
Mm.
There was a question about whether or not it increases cholesterol.
Okay. Recently, in 2016, there was new released on cholesterol. Cholesterol is not what they are bothered about now in total intake. What they are interested is, they're looking at the trans fat, which is so predominant in our foods. Cholesterol does not come from santana, coconut milk. Cholesterol only comes from animal products. Anything that has a mother and can swim will have
right.
cholesterol. Okay? So what's the big story? What's the big fuss about santan? Santan is also a fat. In the sense, it has a fat. So the total fat intake that you take a day is contribution to the total cholesterol. So not only high cholesterol food, but the total fat.
We have LTY on the line. Good afternoon, LTY.
Good afternoon, late night. Good afternoon, dietitian.
Hello.
Hello. How are you both?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let me talk something different, all right?
Sure.
May I bring up the subject on nutrigenomics or nutrigenetics, okay?
Yes.
You see, I believe the future or even now,
yes.
we base more on our gene. What type of gene adapt to what type of food? I tried to study the food pyramid. It might not apply to all, you know.
Yes.
That's why how I judge my health, you know. I'm very healthy. I'm 73. I'm not on any medication.
Okay.
How I judge my health is how I eat the previous night. The morning, you know, morning I wake up, I feel good. Means something I've taken very well and all. So somehow I'm studying my own nutrigenetics or genomics, you see.
Okay.
Can you add a bit... It's not so much your BMI or waistline. I don't quite agree, lah, because certain people are heavy born, all right?
Okay, thank you, LTY.
Maybe you can tell us a bit, any research done. I think this is a future for dietitian and nutritionists. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Okay, nutrigenomics is a new field now, looking at how nutrition and genes work and what has an impact on you. Now, these studies are all done in Europe. A lot of studies are done in Europe, and they try to see the tendency of what kind of food they eat and how it affects the genes. We are very much new in it, right? We are still studying on it. There are a lot of controversies on it. So, in the future, there might be a very good papers to support it. But right now, it is still in the learning process.
Okay, we have a slew of questions via text. I'm sorry that I've been ignoring you guys. We have Eric who says, my diet is mainly vegetables with chicken and fish occasionally. Mm. Hemoglobin and platelets are down. Mm. No other health issues. Did my diet affect this?
So he said that because we have to look at overall intake of protein. So he mentioned that he's fish and chicken.
But mainly vegetables.
Mainly vegetables. Okay. So if he loves more vegetable, then he can take iron-rich vegetables like green leafy vegetables.
Spinach,
yeah, things like that to mark. And of course, meat, chicken is also good source, but red meat is good source, but you can take it once a week. The other thing is also it is good that you also check whether you have enough sleep. Because sometimes people are sleep deprived. And when they're sleep deprived, their body doesn't heal well.
James says, I'm underweight. Can a dietitian help me gain weight?
Mm. Okay. Underweight means it's a BMI less than 19, which I always tell people who are underweight, if they're underweight and they're healthy, they don't have episode of infection or cough and cold and things like that, I suggest they just enjoy their BMI. Right? Unless they are so skinny and they are really sick and they are falling apart, then yes, we need to see what is the underlying. There might be an underlying issue which we do not know. Then we check it out. But if the BMI is... But this one I cannot say over the air, so I would like him to go and see a dietitian with some medical records and blood test to see what exactly is happening.
Nina, and we thought this might come up. I read that coconut oil is good to be used for deep frying. Does it mean that deep frying with coconut oil can be considered healthy?
Okay, any form of deep frying is not really healthy. The type of oil you use is important. Currently, what we advise our patients is to use our mix or blended oils in the market to fry. Coconut oil is used for frying in countries like India and the Philippines, which you can use, but not regularly. It is better to bake, broil, grill more often and use less oil. See, any oil is an oil. Whether good or bad, they are oils. They contribute to calories. So my advice is, yes, you can fry it in the coconut oil because you find chips and all these are fried in coconut oils in some of these countries. But the question now is, how regular, how much? You have to balance it up. So you may want to see your dietitian and talk to her about it.
There is a question that's come in via Twitter about the miracle of coconut oil, which of course has been touted as a miraculous product.
Yes.
And where do you stand on the consumption of coconut oil?
Okay, the consumption of coconut oil will still come in the 30% of your daily intake. The coconut oil, what is the plus point in the coconut oil is it contains a medium chain triglyceride, MCT oil. Now, when you talk about medium chain triglycerides, it bypasses your liver metabolism. Therefore, your liver is not burdened, right? And however said and done, the total fat intake is also important. So what I'm a little concerned about Malaysians is they started drinking oil. And that I'm a little concerned. You don't drink oil. You use oil in your cooking. You drink more water, you know, things like that. So if you want to use coconut oil, there's nothing wrong with it. But everything has to be in moderation.
We have Jennifer who says, can a third stage CKD, and I presume that's chronic kidney disease patient, eat seeds, nutrition, such as chia seeds, black cumin, etc.?
Yes, you can. But I would not want to give a blanket statement now because I would really want to look at the results. And I suggest to her that she really consult a dietitian. Because CKD is something that's very, very individual. We'll have to look at overall performance of the kidney plus the blood test. So I would refrain myself from advising until I see the patient.
Any comments on the Whole 30 diet plan? Is it sustainable? Are there side effects?
Okay, let me tell you, any diets, all these diets that have come out, they have come and gone, right? So what is sustainability? My question now is you go back to basics. Yeah, take your carbohydrate, take your protein, take your vegetables, use the plate. The plate is so easy. Half of it is vegetables. Quarter of it is chicken or fish. And the quarter of it is either any of your starches. Then have a fruit, have water. You know, many of my patients who went back to basics slowly but surely started losing weight because it's a control. So you want to do certain diet for a quick fix, I can't stop you if you want to do it. But you must also bear in mind that at one time you will have to pay back. For example, you know, many people like the Atkins diet, but I know many of my patients who came back after a 1 or 2 years of Atkins diet who had problems with kidneys because of an overdose of protein and they had other issues of high cholesterol. So I think you should read and understand those diets properly. Consult a dietitian before you go on it.
Arya Ratnam wants to know, what is the benefit of rolled oats versus instant or quick cooking oats?
Oh, okay. It's like a parboiled rice versus white rice. There is no difference. Instant oats is something that you can really put hot water and you can take it immediately. Whereas rolled oats, you just have to cook it over a low fire. Both of them have same calories, same value.
Okay.
Okay.
And then we've got Ikwan from Bangi who says, a hospital diagnosed my 18-month-old toddler with ovulostomatocytosis. I hope I'm getting that right, which is a condition where he has abnormally shaped red blood cells. Can diet change his blood cell shape? Or how can diet help with this condition? He's not sick or anything. He just has a weirdly shaped hemoglobin.
I think if the child's hemoglobin is normal, then it should not be an issue. But a diet itself will not change
the makeup of the cells.
But you may want to look how to increase the hemoglobin. Yes, you may. So she can consult the pediatric dietitian in the hospital that she is and talk to the dietitian.
A simple question, is microwave cooking healthy?
Yes, provided you follow manufacturer's instruction. Yeah, use the appropriate, it's always good to use clearware or, you know, Pyrex clearware without any flowers, nothing clearware. Follow instructions properly. Cut the food into approximately the same size. Once you start it, don't stand in front of the microwave. Because some of these microwaves, you do not know whether it has a leak from the rubber protection. Once your microwave is spoiled or is not functionable, please buy a new one. Don't go and repair it.
Is Udo oil good for drinking?
Look, all oils, except for the bad oils, right, should not be drunk. It should be used as a flavoring oil or a
salad,
yep. Things like that.
Okay, so if you want to consume your oils cold, find a way to use it
in
salads. And in,
or you can blend it in your drinks.
Or on bread even.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But
like how the Mediterranean diet, they put their bread into olive oils and eat it.
Right, but just stop downing it in
yes.
tablespoons.
Yes.
Okay. Coming back to this award, the Outstanding Dietitian of the Year, what, in your view, is the importance of receiving this sort of recognition in improving the profession?
Okay. I always think when you are recognized in your field, this will motivate my young dietitians, okay? Sometimes when our young dietitians come, they feel that, oh my God, you know, there's nothing for us. But having these awards motivate, for example, when I was a young dietitian, all my friends told me, my God, I don't know where you're going to get with this job. You know, it's nothing. But you know, during this period of it, you improve your skills, you improve your knowledge, you improve your competency. And you can do things that you never dream of, you know. For example, I used to talk to my patients at one time, changing things. How did I learn to become a different dietitian? It's by going through this. When I joined this as a member of the American Overseas Dietetic Association with the Academy, plus the Malaysian Dietitians Association, I could see how the American dietitians do things very differently. And when I go for their meetings, I sit there and wonder, my goodness, if these people can do, why can't we do? And how come the Malaysians cannot benefit from this? So when I came back, I implemented so many things. And I like what my patients say. Wow, you're different. Huh? You're very different. So I think that's what, you know, learning from all this, which I make, I'm different, makes an impact. And I want the younger dietitians also to realize that there are awards for them. Slow and steady. You know, you shouldn't be greedy about it, but you should work towards getting those awards. And that will actually, every time you get awards, you feel so good because you know you're good. And this is my fifth award, you know, which I slowly worked for, because I remember what my lecturer told me when I left the university: make sure dietetics is a legacy with you, you know. And I remember that word from my professor. And I said, how to make it a legacy? So you have to be the role model. You have to improve yourself. You have to find time for reading. Sometimes it's really mind-boggling, but I think slow and steady, it brings you there.
A lot of people continue to not think about nutrition in terms of having a huge role to play in staying healthy, in recovering, in preventing diseases. You know, we prefer to think of it as the pride and joy of our nation, which it is, but not in terms of our health. What is your message for Malaysians when it comes to eating habits? What do we need to keep in mind every time we head out to a mama or a food court or any one of our very delicious restaurants?
Okay, number one. We love food. Number two, food should be therapeutic to you, not a poison. Okay? And how do you do this? You must always remember, complementary foods must not be eaten excessively. You know what I mean? When they go for functions and all that, sometimes when I see them eating, I wonder whether we are in Sahara Desert. You know, it's like, oh my God, what's going on? We go for functions. And don't take food just because, you know, offer is there. Oh, you buy this, you get this, so you top up more calories. Okay? Food should be your medicine. Okay? It should be therapeutic and it should cure you, not cause you harm. Right? Begin everything in, and there's no such thing as good or bad food. Everything fits into your plan. But the change begins with them. okay, how they look at it. And I think that's very important. Actually, you can eat healthy anywhere. It's a matter of choice, right? For example, I still remember my cha kway teow guy. At one time, I used to like it, so he'll always tell me, yes, yes, I know your cha kway teow. Less oil, egg white, no karang. It became a rhythm in him. And then my friend said, how come you taught him? I said, no, I just told him this is what. And he kept asking me. So it's a matter of change of behavior. And Malaysians must change behavior to anything, not only to food. You know, to so many things that, you know, they become very relaxed, you know. Something happened, they awaken. Then they go back. Then something happened, it's a tsunami. Then they go. And this has happened. Look, I work in the hospital. I work in the Heart Institute for nearly 24 years. When I started, my patients were elderly. Okay, 80, 85, 75, coming for a heart overhaul. I can understand that. But today, my patients are 25, 30. Hey, my goodness. You know, that is the prime of your productivity of life. You fall sick. You become so sad looking, you know. And then families are affected. People are affected, you know. So my advice is, think before you eat.
Thank you very much for coming in today, Mary. I've been speaking with Mary Esau John. About her career as an outstanding dietitian. You've been listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.